Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and Life Coach Wendy Dillard here. Today is Tuesday, January the 2nd, 2018. Once again, Happy New Year, everybody. This is
Happy New Year!
Yay! This is our 4 p.m. Eastern Time edition of LOA Today, your daily dose of happy. And Wendy, we were talking before the show. You've been burying your head in your work so much, I'm not sure if you can even answer the question, but did you have a Happy New Year?
I actually did. I was thinking how fun it is that when I get so laser focused on doing something, I go into amnesia about everything that ever came before. But I'm stopping and relaxing and getting present with myself and remembering what a completely delightful weekend I had. I got a lot done. I got a lot of rest. I got to spend time with friends. So all in all, it was really good. And the biggest thing is all weekend, I mean, really, it started on Friday, I just had this overwhelming sense of refreshing and, like, renewing. Like, 2018 is going to be a magnificent year, I think, for a lot of people.
Nice.
Myself included. Yeah.
Well, that's a nice state of mind to be in. You're off to the right start for sure. Wow. Very good.
Yeah. And that feeling just kind of carried over throughout the whole weekend. Almost like I was giddy, but I didn't have anything specific to attach to the giddiness, but it was there, so I knew there was a sense of well-being, and it just felt great.
That is great. Fantastic. Wow. I have to say ours was relatively quiet and cold. It continues to be cold here in the Northeast. The other day, I can't remember which was. I think it was actually New Year's Day, early in the morning. It was -3 degrees.
Ooh.
Yeah. So and on top of that, we have an interesting problem. This is an example of how to deal with a problem when it happens and it drives you nuts and you just try to stay positive anyway. Because the cold is so cold, and we live in an apartment complex that's kind of old, and the everything's there, it works, but you know, we'll be glad when we get a nicer home, let's put it that way. And the front door has this tendency to not latch when it gets really cold, which is a bit disconcerting if you want to keep, you know, weather out and unwanted guests and that sort of thing. So, yeah, we actually had to call maintenance. We're waiting for maintenance to come by and take a look at our door because we can't latch it.
I mean, will it close? It just won't lock with the actual hardware?
Yeah, it just won't stay closed. So if wind comes along, it'll blow it open. And
What mountain of things did you put behind the door to barricade it?
It does have a deadbolt, and I was having trouble for a couple of days there trying to get the deadbolt to work. I just couldn't find a position to make it work. Last night, we finally got a position that I was able to throw the deadbolt. So that was good. That got us through the night, and I'll try
to
do it.
Now are you locked in and you can't ever leave?
No, actually, we were able to get out. The first ones out were the cats, who insist on going out in any temperature. But they don't stay out very long, but you know, they're out there for 5 minutes, and then, meh, I'm done. Get me in here. But, the funny thing was, I mean, it's just a joke. I mean, it's not a joke, obviously. It's a serious thing, but it's not anything we're taking seriously. It's not anything we're getting all worked up about. And
That's for you.
I'm just confident, you know, it's going to get fixed. I wouldn't be at all surprised if we get a new door out of it, to be perfectly honest. It'll probably be better insulated, and so it'll be even better off, you know. But I'm just not worried about it. And I think that has a lot to do with doing the show and, you know, the work we do with the Law of Attraction and so forth. But no, it just doesn't bother me.
Well, this gives me an opportunity to tell you a door story. Could you believe I can come up with a door story?
A door story? You got to be kidding me. Okay, let's
hear
the door story.
You talked about a door. I have a door story that happened recently.
Well, let's hear it.
And to me, it's a Law of Attraction kind of thing because I was heading out my door. And I was only going to go on a really short errand, and I decided not to lock my door, which I do on occasion. And so I headed out, and it's like I go out my back door, then I go out my back gate, and then that takes me to the driveway where my car is.
Okay.
So I'm in the car. I've turned the key, and my car is ready to go, and I'm about to put the car in reverse when all of a sudden my gate slams open. I mean, like, slammed against the other side. I was like, whoa. Guess I didn't latch it. And by seeing that, it's like it startled me, it got my attention. I had this view of my back door that was wide open.
Mm.
And I guess I hadn't pulled it tight enough for it to latch.
Okay.
And it was wide open. And I thought, had the gate not flung open, I would not have seen that I left my back door open.
Well,
and I would have left my house literally with my door open for who knows how long I was going to be gone for my errand. And I didn't have any sense of concern. I just said thank you to the universe or to all those that, like, support me. And I went in and I closed my door and then I closed my gate and I made sure everything was latched. And as I got back in my car, I thought, you know, this is my life. This is how my life goes.
Like, well, that's cool.
Maybe years ago, that would have happened and I wouldn't have known and somebody might have burglarized me.
Okay.
But that's not the way my life works today. The way my life works today is that all systems are go, and anything that's amiss, the law of attraction always finds a way to get my attention so I can correct it before it becomes a problem.
Well, it certainly did in that case, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a nice save,
yeah.
Really. So kick save and a beauty to the universe on that one.
Well, and it's co-creation because the universe did their job in getting my attention. I did my part in being able to receive the message, and it's like it didn't fluster me. I didn't go down the road of, oh, my God, what if? It's like, no. Instead, on the contrary, I went, no, this is what my life is like.
Mm-hmm.
This is the ease and flow that, you know, Abraham talks about, that pretty much when we get into that receiving mode or in that alignment space, or another way to say it is when we're just feeling perpetually happy,
mm-hmm,
in a state of well-being, this is what we can expect.
This is good. This is very,
yeah,
good. Actually, I have another story that confirms your conclusion. See, we're playing.
Alrighty, go for it.
We're playing story ping pong right now. You know that around the same time that you came on board, I brought two other new co-hosts on board, including Cindy Chavez. Now, Cindy does the Tuesday and Wednesday morning shows with me, although today, unfortunately, she woke up with a cold, so she couldn't do it. But she's been doing those shows with me. And she did something really nice that she didn't have to do. As a thank you for bringing her on board as a co-host, she sent me a copy of E Squared by Pam Grout, which was really nice of her. I mean, she didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
And it's not a book I'd read, so, you know, that made it even better. Well, this past weekend, I actually was kind of taking the weekend off and just enjoying my time. I went onto Facebook. I was messing around in one of the Law of Attraction groups there, answering questions for people. They get a lot of beginners there, so I was answering questions and helping people untangle little messes that they make with, you know, the basics. And an interesting phenomenon was going on. There were a number of people who, and this seems to be actually something of a trend. There are a lot of people who get all worked up in a fear-based way about not being able to interpret number combinations, particularly on clocks, like, for instance, 11:11 or 9:11 or 5:55 or, you know, something like that, something that has a pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And if they see a pattern, if they see it a few times, they get freaked out if they can't interpret it. And what's the law of attraction trying to say to me? And I was trying to tell them, calm down. It's not that big of a deal. It's just a number combination. There's no magic going on here, folks. Just relax, you know. And some of them were having it and some of them weren't having it. But, you know, that's the way it goes. Anyway, after I did that for a bit, I decided, okay, I'm just going to go read the book that Cindy gave me. So I sat down, started reading the book. By the way, I do recommend the book. Pam is a great writer. She's funny. She's irreverent. She doesn't take herself seriously. She doesn't take her topic too seriously. But she has some really good stuff to say. So definitely worthwhile. I can say that even after having only read the introduction in the first chapter, it's really good stuff. So got through the first chapter, and the first chapter is the first of eight or nine. I can't remember which it is. Nine. It's nine do-it-yourself energy experiments that prove that your thoughts create your reality. That's the subtitle of the book. So the first one.
I like that.
Yeah, yeah. So the first one was a really basic, you know, just kind of let's go for it. And the essence of it is this. You're going to do an experiment where you put out to the universe, okay, universe or God, or she calls it field of potentiality, but whatever you want to call it, I want you to prove that you exist. And I want you to send me what she calls a blessing, some sort of unexpected gift or some sort of unexpected thing that shows up in your life. And it all has to happen within 48 hours. In addition to this, you cannot specify what the gift is going to be. That's up to the universe. The universe gets to decide what the blessing is going to be. You just have to put out there it's going to happen. You have to record that it's going to happen, record when it does happen. And she actually wants you to treat it like a scientific study. She has like a little sheet to fill out. you know, the time and date, and here's what you're putting out there, and, you know, here's what you're recording about the data and all that kind of stuff. So I can't honestly say I printed out the page and wrote all the stuff down. I was feeling kind of lazy. I mean, it was the weekend of New Year's Eve. I didn't really feel like doing all the work. But I was reading it, and I was doing it in my head, so I was kind of halfway doing it. Anyway, got to the point where it says, okay, now we're going to do it. So put out to the universe that you want to have the universe prove to you that it really does have this kind of influence over us. And you want the universe to send this blessing. So I said it. I read the phrase. I had it actually written out for you the way they wanted you to say it, the way Pam wants you to say it. I read it, and then it says, okay, now record the date and time on your log sheet. So it was December 30th, 2017. I didn't actually write it again. I was just kind of thinking. I said, okay, let's see what the time is. Got my cell phone, and it said 5:55. And that's exactly what I did. I burst out laughing. Because I realized that it didn't take 48 hours to prove it. I had just gotten proof in a split second. And as I was laughing, I realized that I was also getting the blessing. Because the blessing was laughter. Laughter is a lot of fun. Laughter is good for you.
Aww.
So in a split second, I completed the entire experiment. And that alone made me laugh. I was laughing so hard, Wendy, I practically fell on the floor.
And, you know, I know between Friday's show when you were – oh, no, actually it was another day's show when you were talking about reading the Facebook stuff and seeing, you know, people talk about 111, 555, 333 and all this stuff.
Yep.
I know you've been focusing on that.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And then, of course,
not planning to, but
talking about it now. So that was so prominent in your energetic field.
Oh, yeah.
That was an easy thing for Law of Attraction to pull down and go, oh, well, we'll just do this one for him. Boy, that's simple.
And it was proof that the universe does like speed because the entire experiment took approximately 1/10 of 1 second. I mean, it was bang done.
Wow.
I couldn't believe
you know,
it.
One of the things I love in what I've heard Abraham talk about more recently is that there is almost no time gap when you think a thought and you have zero resistance.
Right. Yep. I proved that for sure.
What I think I could pretty much safely say in your case is you thought the whole 111555333 was just kind of like a fun little silly thing that
right.
people were focusing on, but you personally had no investment in it.
No, none at all.
And so because you had no investment, you therefore also had no resistance. So
exactly.
It was just up in your awareness.
Right.
And because it was in your awareness, that made it that's such an easy thing when you put out the intention, hey, I want some kind of blessing so I can have evidence or proof that Law of Attraction works. So, you know, to me, that's also evidence of when you have a thought that you're focused on and there's zero resistance, it comes to you almost instantaneously.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the one thing I do want to know the answer to, and I doubt that I'll get the answer, but I'll put it out there anyway. How did the universe manage to time it to get me to do the reading at the pace I needed so that at the moment I would pick up my cell phone, it would show me 5:55? That's the part I can't possibly imagine. How did it do that?
Well, I have a comment for it, but I don't know that it's an answer.
Okay.
Because I've also heard both from Abraham as well as other authors and other readers, you know, other sources of scientific whatever, is that the past and the present and the future all exist simultaneously.
Okay.
And so if they all exist simultaneously, what you just said is kind of a proof of that. But I got to tell you, it's really hard. I have a hard time wrapping my head around the past, the present, and the future all exist simultaneously. And yet I've seen and heard that multiple times in my life. And I've even heard somebody in an Abraham workshop kind of asking the question that you were just asking. And the answer to me, again, is still like, okay, because, you know, we live in the present and we think about the past as before mm-hmm. and the future as ahead.
Right.
And this is just part of our three-dimensional physical existence. So thinking any other way is not an easy thing, I think, for humans. But so, like, the universe knows in advance. This is what I've been hearing. The universe knows in advance of everything that you're going to think, everything you're going to do, etc. And we don't always know what we're about to do in the future, you know, or like what we're going to say in the next moment. But the universe does.
It's an interesting point because I've also heard different things from different sources about what the non-physical side is like. And one of the things I've heard is that they do not have time in the sense that we have it. And when I ask, in what sense do they have time, I didn't get a straight answer, so I'm not really sure. But if they're to be taken at face value, then that kind of matches what you're saying, that time just doesn't really fit in to the experience of being non-physical. So what does? I don't know what does. No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, even from a, if I try to think in a linear fashion, because that's how I think.
Sure.
So it just happened to have been 5:55 when you wrote it down. But who's not to say that law of attraction didn't already know what you were going to ask, and they like delayed you by doing some other little task earlier in the day, so that by the time you sat down and put this all together, it would have landed at 5:55.
Or sped me up, one or the other.
Yeah, or it could have just as easily happened at 1:11 or 2:22 or one of those other fun numbers.
What was particularly poignant is that 5:55 was one of the examples used by one of the people I was talking to, so it was really appropriate for that number to come up. Mm. All I knew is I was on the floor laughing, and that's all that really mattered.
Well, in the day we were talking about this, I told you that my number that shows up all the time is 10:14,
right,
representing
right.
October 14th, my birthday.
Right.
And I said I probably see 10:14 on a digital clock at least 5+ times a week. And, you know, we finished our show, and sure enough, that night I saw 10:14, and I just laughed out loud. I didn't see it at 10:13. I didn't see it at 10:15, not 10:17. It was 10:14. I'm like, it happens so constantly that there's just something, it's kind of magical, and yet I still hear Abraham saying, it's so child's play. It's like so child's play compared to the things that they can do. But I think they know us humans, we like those child's play thing because to us we think it's a big phenomenon. And they're like, are you kidding? You know, we're the ones who keep all the planets aligned and not hitting each other, and the sun comes up every day, and you're going, oh, look, the digital clock says 5:55, and we get excited.
Well, for me, it wasn't getting excited. It was the time. It was the bang-bang of, here's the time as the proof, and then here's your laughter as your blessing. And once I got that second part, the laughter is the blessing, that just tripled the laughter. From that point, I was laughing out of control. You know that kind of feeling where you're just rolling in the aisles?
Oh, how...
That was the feeling.
Yeah,
it was a wonderful.
That's a real blessing when you have that
huge.
Kind of laughter.
Yeah, I mean, it was a belly laugh and a half. It was great. And it cleared out who knows how much, but I felt great afterward. I mean, I was telling Louise about it. I was bouncing around the house like, oh, wow, this is great. And like you said, I don't really care about 5:55. I just thought the whole sequence was wonderful.
It is wonderful. Well, and that really speaks to synchronicity.
It does, yes.
And synchronicity is like one of my favorite words, and I see that happen so often. And to me, that's the story of the door,
mm-hmm.
you know, my gate swinging open so I could see
right.
that my door was wide open.
Right.
That was like perfect synchronicity.
Yeah.
And I love that. But, you know, I guess I just want to make a comment, which is synchronicity is not supposed to be something that happens every now and again.
Mm-hmm.
It's really supposed to happen in our lives continually.
And I think it actually does. I mean, one thing that Pam Grout's book, pointed out, which I thought was really fascinating. I've heard lots of numbers. I know you have, too, on this subject. As soon as I say it, you'll recognize it. But there are a lot of different numbers given as to how many bits of information our brains are given to process each day. In her calculation, she didn't give a source. Well, she may have given a source in her footnotes. I didn't check that. But she didn't mention the source in her paragraph. In her source, we get 420 million pieces of information. I think it's 420 million per day. And
wow.
Is it per day? Let's see. I'm going to look it up while I'm talking, see if I can actually find it. But it's some ridiculously large number like that. And then the number we're actually able to process is less than 1/1,000,000th of that amount, which means we are missing just pure data coming to our five senses. we're missing 99.99999% of it.
Well, I know that according to NLP, which is neuro-linguistic programming, we can only comfortably focus on or take in 3 to 7, but most of us are between 3 and 5 pieces of information at any one given time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so grateful that the part of the unconscious mind's job is to blurt out or delete a whole bunch of information in my environment so that I can be focused on just those 3 to 5.
Yeah.
So that I can actually not go insane.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That would be truly, truly crazy. Absolutely truly
yeah.
crazy. Oh, here it is. I found it. Let me read it.
Oh.
I don't see any footnote marks, so it'd be interesting to contact her and find out what the source is for this. But she says, scientists now know the brain receives, 400 billion bits of information each second.
Oh, my gosh.
And to give you some idea of how much information that is, consider this. It would take nearly 600,000 average-sized books just to print 400 billion zeros.
So the number was 400 and
400,
something billion?
400 billion bits of information each second. Now, it's hard to tell what a bit is. If it's like a computer bit, that could mean a lot of different things. But still, that's a heck of a lot of data, no matter how you slice it.
And so back to my point, I sure am grateful that the way we were created is that our unconscious mind knows how to block out a bunch of stuff.
Yeah. And, well, actually, our ARS does most of it, which is at the brainstem. That does a huge amount of filtering. But the same paragraph, she says, let's see, going down here, when all is said and done, we're down to 2,000 measly bits of information that can actually be processed by the conscious mind. So 2,000 bits as opposed to 400 billion bits. That's per second in each case.
You know, I wonder if the stuff that's beyond the whatever number she said you can process with the conscious mind, you said that was 2,000?
2,000 bits of information per second, yeah.
I wonder if the excess of that is stuff that is not physical.
I wouldn't be surprised.
You know, that it's intangible in that it's in our environment, but it's all the stuff that we can't see. Like, we know that, you know, there are radio waves floating all over the place. We just can't see them, you know, because or whatever the waves are that are in the air that, like, make the cell phone work and bounce off towers and make a microwave work and make our wireless phones work and our Wi-Fi work. I mean, all of those things are invisible to our naked eye, but they exist.
Mm. Yeah.
And so
now, of course,
I
now the caveat here, there is a caveat. The caveat is that it's stuff that is receivable by our five senses. So it has to be something that the sense is at least capable of receiving, even if the conscious mind never gets to actually do anything with it.
Now, you're saying the 2,000 is stuff that we can do with our five senses, or the 400 and
2,000 bits per second is what we can consciously handle. 400 billion bits per second is what our senses actually collect.
Got it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think we have senses beyond our five physical senses.
Which would be even more interesting to try to measure that. This, according to her, what scientists have found. And again, I'd like to know what her source is, because those are fascinating numbers, no matter how you look at it. But the point is still valid, even if the numbers aren't accurate, because certainly there's a whole bunch of information we are receiving on a regular basis that if we were to try to process it, if we didn't have that ARAS system, that ascending reticular activation system, I think is what the full name is. It's a little piece of brain at the brainstem. If it weren't for that, we would all be autistic, because that's what autism is. Autism is the inability to filter all that stuff. Yeah.
Well, you know, the number that I think is the most fascinating is the number that our listeners can call us at.
That's a good one. I like that.
They can call us at 860-264-5432. And if you didn't memorize that right now, that's okay, because you can go to loatoday.net, and that phone number is listed, because we would love for people to start calling in and dialoguing with Walt and I. Because, you know, we're pretty smart folks, but I know that there's a whole lot more intelligence going on with all sorts of other people that could add to these conversations and make them really fun and bouncy and juicy.
Absolutely. Oh, no doubt about it. And the fact is that we don't get the overwhelming majority of people, and by overwhelming, I said this morning, and it's really true, I checked it, 99.99% of our listeners listen after the podcast has been broadcast. They listen to the recording. We only have single digits currently listening to the actual broadcast. But that we're hoping to increase. So that's why we put the number out there. That if you're wondering why we haven't gotten a whole lot of calls, that's why. The sheer numbers of the thing haven't swung around in our favor yet.
Well, and you sent me an email this weekend saying that we raced past 12,000 listeners for the show already?
Oh, yeah. In fact, if you give me a second here, I can bring up the spreadsheet that I was calculating on. I keep a spreadsheet about how many people download and how many of them are unique people, people downloading over and over again different podcasts and so forth. And what we had was a 53% increase in downloads compared to November. We had 4,113 for December, 2,686 for November, and that 4,113 is 34% of the entire total we've had since November 2016. So in 1 month, we got over one-third of the entire amount we've had since 2016. And this is just the curve that we're on right now.
I'm jazzed to know that what we're doing is making a difference enough that people not only, like, tune in but listen to a whole show and then come back and listen to more. You know, that speaks volumes that what we're doing is something people really want.
Oh, yeah. And further proof that they want it, I'll go back to a year ago, January of 2017. Approximately one out of every for every person who downloaded episodes, I'm saying that wrong. For every person who downloaded episodes, they would download an average of 5 episodes and play them. Last month, that ratio of 5-1 increased to 22-1. So on average, every person who downloaded episodes and played the episodes did so 22 separate episodes during the month of December.
That is incredible. Yay.
And then to further make it more interesting and more exciting, I've been checking. You never really know directly when somebody starts playing an episode whether they've played the whole thing. There's no way to actually track during an episode, are they still listening? Unless you have a major platform that's capable of doing that. We use Spreaker, and Spreaker can do that to a certain extent, but it's still not 100% perfect. But what I am able to do is I'm able to compare the file sizes with how much bandwidth gets used. And if I do that, if I take the total amount of bandwidth used for the website, which is almost always going to be the MP3 files, the audio files, because they're by far the largest files that anyone downloads. Web pages are tiny by comparison. If I take that amount and then divide into it the number of download attempts, what I end up concluding, and there's like a little calculation I have to do, roughly 90.1% of the podcast on average gets played just based on the amount of download that gets done. So people are listening to the full podcast in those cases.
That's incredible. Thank you, listeners.
Yeah.
Thank you.
The only place where we're not absolutely knocking it out of the park, and we're still growing, it was a 9% growth rate, was the number of unique listeners. So that's why we keep putting out there that we want you to share it with your friends, especially anybody who you know who has an interest in the law of attraction, because they're going to be the ones who are more interested in this, in the early stages anyway. Even if it's just one or two people, just share what you're listening to with them, because we want to expand the number of people, unique individuals who are catching the show. And if we can do that on a regular basis, this thing's going to just keep growing and growing, and we're going to be enabled to just keep putting out more and more and more daily doses of happy every single day.
Yep. Over 1 million listens is what we're shooting for in 2018.
That's right. That's our goal, and I think we're going to hit it, certainly at the rate we're going with the download attempts. I mean, averaging, what are we averaging? Let's see. Over the last 12 months, we're averaging about 50 to 60% increase every month. At that rate, we'll be at 1 million by, like, June.
Wow. That reminds me of, what's that story where if somebody, like if you're looking at 18 holes of golf and someone gives you a penny every time you do another hole, and, it's like the first one you have one penny, on the second
hole
you have two. Yeah, and it keeps doubling until it's some huge, gigantic number by the 18th hole.
Oh, right. Yeah, exactly.
Because that's the power of multiplication.
It is.
So phenomenal.
Now,
so
does it always work out that way?
Increasing. Pardon me?
Does it always work out that way? No. But the good news is it has been working pretty consistently that way. So we have a good shot.
Well, and what I know about law of attraction is law of attraction is synonymous with momentum.
Oh, yes.
And when you start getting momentum in motion, it just keeps going.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with you. I was describing that from a pure statistics viewpoint, but from an LOA viewpoint, I think it's a sure thing.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So I wonder, now that we're at the halfway point of the show, should we actually introduce our topic?
Yeah, I suppose we should probably get to that, shouldn't we? I was actually doing some research trying to find an appropriate topic for today, and it occurred to me that we really haven't done on any of the shows in quite some time. Maybe I did it with Joel about a year and a half ago, but I can't remember for sure. We haven't really gone into any deep exploration of the positive psychology movement, which has been very prominent in psychology circles for about the last 25 years. It has really made tremendous inroads in a field that was largely dominated by what we might call negative psychology, but it's often abnormal psychology, the psychology of dysfunctionalities and so forth. That's where most of it has always been. So this is a really new phenomenon. And the typical psychologist who embraces the positive psychology side in most cases does not identify themselves as a law of attraction practitioner. However, what they talk about mirrors LOA so consistently that I've always been fascinated by what they're finding and what they're validating, because a lot of their validations end up validating the law of attraction, and that's what I like about it. Hmm. So with that spirit of idea in mind, I just want to introduce some of the players that are involved. A lot of it started with a psychologist at the University of Pennsylvania named Martin Seligman, who for the longest time, starting back in the 1960s, did a lot of research on the abnormal psych side. And he was actually the author of a rather pivotal book called Learned Helplessness, in which he did a whole bunch of studies with dogs, I believe it was, demonstrating how you can actually train someone to be helpless, train animals, human beings, whatever, to believe that they have no hope of ever getting out of scenario X. And so they just become self-chained, so to speak. And I really hated it because it wasn't positive. But I kind of gave up on him too soon, because in 1995 he switched gears and he was one of the original founders of the positive psychology movement. Now, toward that end, he was also joined by a number of researchers at Harvard University, one of whom was named Dr. Tal Ben-Shahar. And Dr. Ben-Shahar had a research assistant named Sean Aker, who you and I both know of, the author of The Happiness Advantage. And the two together started a course. It was the first course offered at Harvard University in positive psychology. It was positive psych number 1501. And when they first offered the course, they weren't really sure anyone was going to sign up for it because the field was so new. To their amazement, the first day of the first class, a super large auditorium was jammed to the rafters. It was the most popular course ever offered at Harvard University.
Wow, that is a cool thing to know.
It's very cool. And what's really even more amazing is that if you've ever heard Dr. Ben-Shahar, he is a horrible lecturer. He is the most boring human being on the face of the earth. But the subject matter was so good, and students at Harvard especially, they put themselves under such tremendous pressure. They needed to figure out how to get their own psychologies under control, and that's why they were signing up in droves. They literally had to turn people away. Can you imagine that?
Mm-mm.
I mean, it's mind-blowing. But it kind of makes sense when you consider how many people there are who just desperately need positivity. It's one of the reasons we do our podcast. But there is so much emphasis on the other side. It's almost like throwing a life preserver, and all of a sudden, 1,000 people start swimming toward the life preserver. Craziness. So anyway, Dr. Thomas Ben-Shahar put out an article, and he puts out a lot of articles, but this one was published on December 31st this year, or last year actually. And in this article, he cited a study that was done by one of his colleagues. He's no longer at Harvard. He taught at Harvard for a number of years. He's now out doing his own thing and working with corporations and various stuff. But one of his colleagues is still there. Her name is Dr. Ellen Langer. And Dr. Langer, I think I mentioned her to you previously. She's the one who authored the study about the elderly men who were kept in one location for a week and taught and told to behave like it was 20 years earlier, and they had pictures of Eisenhower on the wall. Did I tell you about that study?
Yes, you did. You did.
That was her. Anyway, she has since done another study, which had some very interesting findings. I thought I'd mention them and give us something to talk about here. Let's see if I can go to the article. It says, in an experiment conducted by Ellen Langer, and this is by Dr. Ben-Shahar, by Langer and her student Laurelyn Thompson, participants were given a list of undesirable traits, such as rigid, gullible, and grim, and were then asked which of these traits they had tried to change in themselves and whether or not they had succeeded. Sometime later, they were asked to evaluate the importance of other traits, such as consistency, trust, and seriousness. And what participants were unaware of was that the traits of the second list are essentially positive equivalents of the traits on the first list. So, for instance, the negative way of saying it is rigid, the positive way of saying it is consistent. The negative way of saying it is gullible, the positive way of saying it is trusting. Or the negative would be grim, the positive would be serious. What Langer found was that those who valued a certain positive trait had difficulty changing its negative counterpart. So those who valued consistency, for example, had difficulty becoming less rigid, because deep down, subconsciously, they feared it would mean becoming less consistent. And along similar lines, people do not give up excessive feelings of guilt because they do not want to lose their sensitivity. They continue to worry out of proportion to the situations they are dealing with because they fear that not worrying will mean not being responsible. I thought that was really interesting in light of many of the problems that people have applying the law of attraction. Because certainly, a lot of people get hung up on, you know, different areas of resistance, and many of those areas of resistance seem to be very much related to things like guilt. And it made me wonder, is it that they are resisting because they're afraid that they're going to lose sensitivity, and that's why they tend to stay with the more guilty type interactions? I just thought that was an interesting thing.
That's a heavy duty concept. I mean,
it is.
I think I've experienced pieces and parts of that in my life as I've come up against things that I wanted to change. I don't think I've ever grouped it that way, because I mean that's kind of like a big global something. What was it? Consistent versus rigid.
Consistent versus rigid, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know that those specific words necessarily would resonate for every individual in terms of them thinking that they're two sides of the same stick. But, you know, I think anybody could pick a subject and find the polar opposites, and that would be an interesting thing to kind of talk through.
Yeah.
For a specific individual.
It's also tricky. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, because when I work with clients or even talking with friends or family, I realize that specific words trigger things where other words just don't. You know, and
true.
Like I was composing an email yesterday, and I was sharing something with my mom, and a word that we use with her often is double-mindedness.
Double-mindedness.
And so we've often talked about being double-minded, where it's like you want one thing, but you're in a bind because to want one thing is to not want the opposite, but you kind of want them both. But for me, second guessing was kind of the word that worked for me, because I know I talked on the show the other day how I found myself, oftentimes I would feel like I really got an intuitive impulse to act on something, but then I would second guess, did I really hear that? Was that really the guidance that I got? Did I make that up? And I would second guess it.
Mm.
Well, in my mom's world, it would be called double-mindedness, but in my world, it was called second guessing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for the two of us, it really kind of meant the same thing.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, and so I just think when it comes to doing a study like this, certain words don't always trigger the same meaning. Even if you give a dictionary definition, it doesn't mean the same to how people relate to things. But I think the concept is an interesting one. I just don't know if the words really resonate for me personally.
I tend to agree with you, because words are, especially these kinds of words, they have a lot of emotional tagging to them, shall we call it, and mm-hmm. different people are going to evaluate them differently. That's also the nature of the law of attraction. We're talking about an emotional universe when we're talking about that. But particularly when you're trying to do a scientific study, you're trying to pull as much of the emotion out as you can so you can, you know, not have too many uncontrolled factors. And that's one of the most difficult things in the field of psychology in general, let alone positive psychology, trying to remove the unwanted factors. But nevertheless, I do think there is an interesting side to it, because I wonder if there are some of these, I'll call them negative rigidities. I wonder if there are a number of these rigidities that are actually at the root of why people have trouble with applying the law of attraction and feel like that they are failing and feel like they aren't getting the results that they're looking for. I wonder if the rigidities are getting in the way. And I don't know of a good way to test that. I just thought it'd be an interesting thing to bring up.
Hmm.
So
I'm trying to think of something where I have been in the past a very rigid person, but that to me would be, I would call that black and white, where I had black and white thinking.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think very black and white anymore on many topics. On many topics, I now feel like I'm kind of in technicolor, where there's a varying degree of possibilities, but it's no longer, this is the rule and that's all there is to it, you know. Like, I would make a really bad judge, because a judge has to work with the rigidity, if you will, of the law as it's written.
Mm-hmm.
And if a judge has that personal opinion that differs from the law, a judge still has to use the law to come up with a verdict.
In theory.
So that one doesn't work for me. Like, that's why I couldn't be a judge, because I tend to be very principle-minded, where there may be a rule or a law in place, and I'll think, yes, I can see why that law was created, but it was really for the intention of keeping some evil, if you will, or some ill doings out of somebody's life, you know, to protect people. But at the same time, it could actually incarcerate the innocent, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it starts to get a little bit messy in terms of Abraham Hicks' teaching, because Abraham Hicks teaches that there's really not so much a thing as good and evil, that's more of preferred and not preferred. So it starts to get really messy in the field of law. But I think your point is clear enough. Certainly, that kind of thing can happen very easily.
Of course, what's preferred for one is not preferred for another.
Absolutely, yeah. So. That's what makes it really tricky. I would say that I think there are very, very few judges who are able to remove emotion from their verdicts. I mean, there are some cases that are relatively clear-cut, so they don't really have to impose their own belief system on it. It's like, okay, yeah, we have 15 witnesses watching this guy rob the bank. I think he probably robbed the bank. not too difficult. But there are others that tend to get more out on the further reaches of human rights and so forth, and those are the ones where I think if you look at what actually gets decided, you find large ranges of opinions issued in courts, and the opinions are directly driven by not just their emotions, but also by their sense of principles, like yours are also driven by your sense of principles. So you'd probably be a better judge than you think, but I think it serves you well that you recognize the weakness, let's put it that way.
Well, I've had this idea for a very long time, and I would love for somebody who's a lawmaker to actually put this into place. I think every law should have a 10-year expiration.
That's a good idea.
Because I think things become obsolete very mm-hmm. quickly, and I think oftentimes we put things in place to protect people because some heinous thing has occurred. But, you know, we change as a people. Society changes. I know, I'm in Dallas, and Fort Worth is right next door to us, and there are still laws on the books about horses on the street and what can happen and what can't happen. You know, like you can't hook up your horse to some in front of some kind of a facility or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm like, those laws were done sometime in the 1800s.
Right, right.
And I'm thinking, see, those laws should have fallen off the books, but instead they're taking up digital space now and probably paper space, you know, before, just keeping them on the books.
But they are amusing. I mean, there's a book actually that I've seen on that topic. And my favorite example from that book was a law, I believe, from Nebraska. And at the time of the publication of the book, it was still on the books. And the law was that if you are driving your, they didn't call it an automobile. What did they call it? What, it was like one of the early terms for a car, and I can't think what it was.
Your motor buggy?
Your motor car. Yeah, I think it was motor car. If you're driving your motor car on a public road and you come upon a horse-drawn buggy or cart or some other horse-drawn vehicle coming in the opposite direction, you are to stop your vehicle, disassemble it, pull all the parts off the road, allow the horse and buggy to pass you, reassemble your car, and then drive on.
Okay, that's a little ludicrous.
And that one still was on the books at the time that book was published. I love that one. That was like my favorite of all time.
Wow. Yeah, and my thought is, if you want to keep a law, then somebody needs to like revote to keep it on the books. Otherwise, it should just go away.
It's an interesting
concept. And then you
concept.
Never have to look at it and go, is this obsolete or not obsolete, you know?
I love the motivation behind it. I'm also sad to say, and this actually ties into something I should bring up about myself. I have training as a political scientist. My bachelor's degree was in political science. And so as a result, I have a fairly broader view than some do as to what is likely to happen in government. And based on certain laws that have sunset provisions to them and how they get treated, what actually tends to happen is a whole lot of legislative time gets used in reenacting these laws with little or no debate and often adding worse things into the provisions because nobody has time to read the laws. So there's a flip side to it, unfortunately. But I love the motivation behind it.
But see, if they automatically became obsolete after 10 years, then you don't waste any time in debating it or thinking about it. It's just gone.
Oh, no, but that's not what happens. The leaders want to keep the laws, and they'll take advantage of the fact that because there's not enough time to debate it, they'll throw more stuff in and they'll reintroduce it and get it passed. So, for instance...
Well, I know. That's talking about what is. I'm talking about what I'd like it to be.
Oh, I understand. I'm just saying I love the idea behind it. I just know practically because of the way our legislatures tend to work, it probably would backfire, but I still love the motivation.
And it wouldn't have to be 10 years. It could be 15. It could be 20. It was an arbitrary number. But the idea is, I just don't think we should have so many laws, period. Have you ever noticed that new laws get enacted after some tragedy has occurred?
Oh, in large numbers, yeah. Well, not just whenever.
So often it's a knee-jerk reaction to a one-time something because there's so much fear that one-time something could happen multiple times in the future.
But it's not just that. I mean, literally, most people aren't aware. Do you know that literally 10,000 or more laws get passed by the U.S. Congress every year?
Holy cow. No, I had no idea.
And no one has any idea what's in any of them. They don't have time to read those. I'm not kidding. It's a joke, yes. But literally, congressmen and senators do not have the time to read the bills. In fact, there was even an organization that put in a bill saying, let's pass a bill that requires all bills to be read before Congress before they could be passed just to slow it down. And it was rejected.
Yeah, I have yet to understand how you can put in bills or laws into other bills or laws that have nothing to do with each other.
Oh, it's really easy. I mean, if you don't try to understand it in terms of the legislative process, it's really easy to understand. It's all about lobbying. Special interests. Special interests drive it. So they're able to get congressmen to do whatever they want.
Like, I think there should be a law that says if we're talking about vehicle safety, you should not be able to put anything about health care into that policy.
Oh, there have been attempts to pass those laws. They never get out of committee. Seriously, those laws get proposed every single term. There are always congressmen, particularly in Congress, in the House, not so much in the Senate, but more in the House, congressmen every year who introduce that kind of legislation. They never get out of committee, ever.
That is so funny.
Yeah.
You know what, Walt, before the show started, I was, you know, I was tossing around ideas for a topic, and I was thinking, you know, today I'm in the mood for what I call a popcorn show.
Okay.
Anything that pops up, you'd like talk about it. And that's kind of what we're doing.
Kind of, yeah.
It's a popcorn show.
It's true. It's very similar. Yeah. I mean, we do have sort of a theme of the positive psychology. And there was actually something else I wanted to mention in that. And this, again, ties into Abraham Hicks' teaching. And it's actually kind of an interesting thing. There is an article that appeared at goodtherapy.org. And it was dated yesterday. And in this article, it was entitled, Gratitude Journals Can Promote Feelings of Altruism. And without giving you all the details, I mean, it's pretty straightforward, so I don't have to read the whole article. But the gist of it is that they found that when people keep gratitude journals, they tend to be more grateful and they have more altruistic tendencies. And the altruistic tendencies were measured in terms of desire to give to a food bank. And that seems fairly straightforward. It actually seems a little redundant. Now, people who record gratitudes in a gratitude journal feel more grateful. Like, you needed to do a study for that? that one seemed a little strange to me. But
as in, like, people who tend to focus on happiness tend to be happy more.
Yeah, right. This from the
people who are depressed tend to experience a lot of sadness and are often on antidepressants.
This is from the school of positive psychology. But the altruism part was the part that caught my attention. And the reason it caught my attention is that altruism has an interesting history in the teaching of Abraham Hicks, because Abraham Hicks basically teaches that we are all selfish and that selfish is a good thing, and that you really can't attract for anybody else. And so this is one of the few times where the positive psychology movement focuses on something that the law of attraction side, or at least the Abraham Hicks branch of law of attraction, let's put it that way. I don't want to speak for, you know, like the Neville Goddard side or any of the other, you know, branches of it. But on the Abraham Hicks side, there's like a little bit of a tension here, because altruism is not only big on the positive psychology side, it's also big in society. The idea of being selfless and of giving to others and so forth. And so I don't want to spend a lot of time on it. We actually can't, because we only have 7 minutes left. But I just wanted to ask you, what do you think about this whole concept of altruism and selfishness, and how does it all fit into LOA from your perspective?
Well, I guess everything kind of fits into LOA, just because that's the universal mechanism that,
true,
like, matches things up. But,
right.
I've never really thought about it in terms of, you know, charitable things or being a philanthropist and how law of attraction really works with it. I do have a quick little something that I can share that happened to me the other day.
Okay.
I was one of the many newsletters that I follow. You know, somebody had sent out something, and there was kind of like she wanted to make people aware of a charitable organization. And it was something that, you know, she played this video and I watched it, and it tugged at your heartstrings. And, you know, it was definitely be a part of this. And, you know, I know for me, it's like my heart just felt really good when I thought about being a part of something like this. And so she had set this target that like 1,000 people from her list would sign up to do $30 a month toward this charity. And it felt really good to me, and I was like, oh, I'm going to do this. And so I was sharing this with a girlfriend, and I just told her about it, you know. And I said, yeah, I'm in a financial position. I can do $30 a month, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I didn't do it at the time because I was doing it, listening to it on my cell phone, but I thought when I get back to my desk, I'll do it then. And so several days went by, and I knew that her deadline was December 31st. Not that you couldn't do it afterwards, but that's when she was trying to get 1,000 people by December 31st.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And for me, I went back to my computer and I looked at it, And there was just a feeling of, huh, no. I went, what happened to my altruistic, yes, I want to be a part of something bigger than me?
Mm.
And I just got no. And it wasn't like, no, you can't do it. But, you know, part of my personal practice is I always ask my inner being, like, would doing this be for my highest and best good? Or would doing this, you know, actually work for me in a positive way? And I kind of got no. And I was just like, well, that's just really weird.
Mm.
And so I was talking to my same girlfriend about it a couple days later. And I said, you know, I don't know the reason why I got a no. But I said, I do now in hindsight remember when I was telling you that I was kind of excited to do this.
Mm-hmm.
But there was just a little teeny feeling within me that felt like, no, don't do that. And she said, really? And I said, yeah. And I said, I know that I can be swept away very easily, you know, especially if there's a visual component. And so, like, just to give you an example, like infomercials, you know, in the day when infomercials were crazy because we didn't have the internet, I had to set a rule for myself, which is I can write down all the information on this product that I thought was fabulous from an infomercial, but I had to wait 3 days to make the purchase. And
good
if three
practice.
Days later I was still just as excited, I could buy it. But if I wasn't, then it was really just something where I got hyped up because of their salesmanship.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so I kind of sensed that this was in that same category. I kind of got hyped up to be altruistic and to be part of this charity, even though I still think it's a fabulous charity. But, you know, I really do live by what guidance comes to me. And I thought, well, for whatever reason, and I don't have to know the reason right now, it doesn't feel like the right thing for me to do.
Hmm.
And I kind of hope that at some point in the future it does become a good thing for me to do.
Mm-hmm.
But for right now, it's like, it's not. So I don't know how that falls in the whole thing of law of attraction and altruism, but, you know, I do feel that, you know, one thing's major thing that Abraham teaches about law of attraction is to follow how something feels.
Right.
Because if it doesn't feel right, if something feels heavy or just, it's because how you're thinking about it is not in alignment to how your inner being's thinking about it. But if
Absolutely.
You do something, do it when you're in a space of alignment. And I'm even thinking for me, maybe all it is I'm not in alignment to this gift yet. But once I do, then it'll be something I can do.
Maybe that's what it'll be, too. I also have another thought, but we only have about a minute and a quarter left, so I probably won't try to do the whole thought. But I'll mention that on the Facebook group that I've been spending time in, there are a number of posts from people, usually women, who are trying to attract back an ex-mate who they separated for whatever reason. They're trying to attract them back. And the interesting part is they never really seem to have really exciting reasons about why they want the mate back. It almost sounds like it's more codependent, but they're trying desperately and they're asking for advice on how to attract it back. It made me wonder if that ties in some way too. I'm not really sure. But like I said, I don't have enough time to talk about it because we're down to about 40 seconds left.
I mean, it makes sense. If a woman's not in alignment for the best reasons that her inner being would know that would really be for her highest and best good, that could be why it doesn't happen.
It makes sense. It makes total sense. I do want to make sure we get in. If you have not yet subscribed to the podcast, we are trying to up that number, the number of unique listeners to the podcast. We're trying to make that one raise higher than it's been raising. It's been doing well, but not as well as how many downloads are actually being listened to. That's going crazy. We just got to get the other side. So please subscribe by going to loatoday.net on your iPhone. Go to the iTunes store or to your podcast software. Search on LOA Today. Or on your Android phone, again, go to Google Play. Search for LOA Today. And Wendy, if somebody wants a private session, how do they reach you?
At wendydillard.com.
Wendy, been a pleasure. I'm looking forward to doing it again tomorrow. We're kicking off 2018 in a big way.
Absolutely. I will be here tomorrow with you, Walt.
I'll be here with Bells on. We'll see you all tomorrow here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye now.